Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
It is better to be truthful and good than to not.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen, and not a one of you is prepared for it.
And they are sometimes joined by guests like...
This is Travis.
I had to stop her from screaming.
And Diane.
If you men only knew.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1992 action suspense film Patriot Games, directed by Philip Noyce of The Saint. And based on Tom Clancy's novel of the same name. Although with...
Which he quickly disavowed after he read the first screenplay.
Yeah, there's some differences in the script and in his novel that he objected to.
Well, there's a lot of differences in Clancy books versus the movies. But you know what? He's cashing the paycheck so he can shut the hell up. Of course, he's not doing much of anything now. He's dead, so...
Well, I'm pretty sure I have never read an entire Tom Clancy novel.
They're not that good. So, and I like the Tom Clancy movies, but the books, I've read three of them, and they're kind of really formulaic. So if you've read one, you've read them all. There's a pattern to them. And I guess... If you're better at suspending some of your disbelief or not letting your imagination run wild, you could read the books and be surprised. But after the second book, I was like, oh no, I already know how it ends.
Well, but I think, so. You know, he had that niche. He landed in that place in that post Ian Fleming, post Travis McGee.
Well, he was in the right place, especially considering, because, you know, it was still the Cold War at that point. So, you know, he was in the right, he was in prime picking for the kind of tension, you know, global tension, regional, unstable government, kind of, you know, East versus West mentality. When the spy game and spycraft was still a big deal.
But also, he was the king of the techno thriller. He was the one talking about all the whiz-bang technology.
Right, because I think, didn't he have a background in the CIA himself?
Yeah, I think he wrote, he actually wrote, well, I guess, see, I'm out of my depth here on Tom Clancy knowledge. Yeah, I think he worked for at least one military agency and ended up getting published. Oh, I know why he became popular. It's because his first novel came out. Well, we already talked about this on Hunt for October. I think Hunt for October came out and it was like some kind of university press or maybe even the Department of Navy press or something. And Ronald Reagan read it and liked it. And just like Jelly Beans, it became popular sort of based on that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Jelly Beans have always been good. And you know what you're getting when you read a Tom Clancy book, I believe, or at least you know what you're getting when you see a Tom Clancy movie. Because even though watching this twice this week to get ready for this, there's no new ground on this movie. You know, there's nothing super special about this movie. It's pretty well acted, and the cast is certainly worth talking about. But it's also, it hits all the beats you wanted to hit, and it's perfectly enjoyable, at least for me.
Yeah. No, I mean, and this is a fun movie. I mean, to me, it's a good... thriller action movie without being too over the top crazy and up its own ass.
The lead character, the hero of this novel, is not a superhero. He's a 50-year-old guy who basically is a teacher and a lecturer.
Yeah, and that was the one thing I kind of liked about this movie, is it made him much more human. It made him, you know, he wasn't supernatural. He wasn't James Bond, you know, and he takes his beatings. So he's not Superman.
Oh yeah, and he never carries a gun. You know, he ends up at various times needing to have a gun, but it's not like he's a super marksman either.
Right. And so originally this was supposed to be Alec Baldwin. When The Hunt for Red October was made, when it first came out, it was a sleeper hit. Nobody had really expected that it was going to be a huge hit, but it was a huge, Hunt for Red October was huge. When word of mouth finally hit it, it blew up, it exploded. And I remember because the movie, when I worked at the movie theater, the managers would talk about how crazy it was and how they were constantly selling out and they just could not get enough people in. And that was before I even worked at the theater. So the president of the studio said, we want two more movies, at least two more movies. And so they bought the options for two or three more novels. And so this is kind of there's a trilogy of Hunt for Red October, Patriot Games, and Clear and Present Danger, even though Patriot Games is actually the first book, I believe. But the way that played out, it didn't work out like that. But Alec Baldwin he had waited for Patriot Game, but the production dragged too long, and he had agreed to do A Streetcar Named Desire on Broadway, and he wanted to do that instead of this movie. And so at like the 11th hour, they had to rewrite the script, and then they got Harrison Ford, who originally didn't want the movie. He said, after watching The Hunt for Red October, the best part of Hunt for Red October was Sean Connery's role. And that's what he wanted. He wanted that kind of role, which there really wasn't that part to this movie per se. But when they gave him the kind of the rough draft of the rewritten script with him in mind, he agreed to it. He thought it was a good idea. And then he signed up for this and Clear and Present Danger, which is the next movie.
The only character that reprised his role was James Earl Jones, right?
Correct. And by the way, this is the first time that James Earl Jones and Harrison Ford ever worked together directly.
Oh, that's true, because James Earl Jones, his voice was in Star Wars, but he was never on set.
They were never on the stage together, right?
And it turns out I like Harrison Ford a lot. You know, he really only does one thing, at least in movies that I've seen, but he does really well.
He does that finger thing.
What's the finger thing?
So later in the movie, so spoilers, when the Sinn Féin guy comes in the hospital to give his condolences, you know, of the injuring of his daughter and his wife, you know, Harrison Ford looks at him, and he looks at Harrison Ford, Harrison Ford just raises the hand and finger, like, don't talk to me.
Yes.
Yeah, that finger we recognize. Because that kind of motion we've seen before.
Do you mean in our own personal lives?
What's that? Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right. Are we talking about our father's finger?
I was actually referring to me motioning for some crazy woman to move her car around your porch.
Yeah.
Car.
I was. Okay. Yes. Because I was like, you haven't seen that finger. You've only been on the giving end of that finger.
but that finger, I've come to realize that, like, I've seen that multiple places, not just me. I'm not the only one who does that, by the way.
Oh, no.
Our father does that, too. Although I haven't seen him I have not seen him be that mad in some time, but it made me laugh out loud. I couldn't explain why I was laughing to Derek. I was like, it's because he didn't know why it was funny, because it really isn't supposed to be a funny part of the movie. And of course, I'm laughing like an idiot because I've used that finger before. Well, that's my signature finger move.
Yeah, there's a scene that at first I thought it was kind of a throwaway scene, but it really makes a difference in this movie. And it's not even like super subtle, but it really is kind of powerful. It explains Jack Ryan's whole character. But we'll get to that in a second. Shall we dive into the plot?
Yeah.
It's retired CIA agent Jack Ryan, played by Harrison Ford. He is on vacation with his family, who consists of Ann Archer, his wife, and Thora Birch, his daughter, in London.
God, is that who that is?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Wow. Oh, now I feel old.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the opening of this movie, what the hell was with the long trees?
Okay, the long trees?
They're just this long, successive, like, sweeping bunch of trees past the camera.
Is that just a background upon which you can throw the titles?
I guess, but it was distracting and nauseating.
Oh, that's funny. I didn't even notice the trees.
Because it was just this long, sweeping vista of trees until you get to the Ryan house. So it just annoyed me, is all.
Okay. Well, anyway, while in London, they witness a terrorist attack on a member of the royal family, Lord William Holmes, who is both the Queen Mother's cousin and the British Secretary of State for Northern Ireland. Jack Ryan intervenes and is injured, but he kills one of the assailants, Patrick Miller, while the older brother, Sean, played by Sean Bean, looks on. The remaining attackers flee, and Sean is arrested by the police. And because Ann Archer's a doctor, she supervises the recovery of her husband. And while he's recovering, he's also called to testify in court against Sean Miller, who is part of a splinter cell of the Provisional Irish Republican Army. That's important. The splinter cell part of it is important. Because we cut away to that particular cell leader, Kevin O'Donnell, played by Patrick Bergen, who is talking to another IRA brigade leader, Jimmy Reardon or O'Reardon, depending on which source you see, played by Jonathan Ryan.
No, not in all eternity. He'll not chirp a word. Not Sean Miller. And not while his brother is lying on a slab. What's the matter, Jimmy? Don't you believe it?
It's the entire thing I don't believe. The royal family, Kevin. You know that only turns people against us. Look, this was totally unauthorized. And the other brigade commanders, they know that you were behind it.
Fuck the bloody IRA. All these years of war and they've got us nowhere. In its heart and soul, England is still a monarchy, and that is where we must strike. At the royals and the ruling class. You're either with us or you're against us, Jimmy boy. Make up your mind.
Oh, I'm with you.
Good. That's all I wanted to hear.
Then later, Reardon sends IRA gunmen to kill O'Donnell, but O'Donnell kills them instead. And in the meantime, another member of the cell, Annette, played by Polly Walker, ends up killing Jimmy in a nice scene where he talks about, you're not going to make me wear a rubber, are you? But here's the plot elements that was problematic for Tom Clancy. First of all, the attack on the members of the royal family is inspired by a true similar event where there was an attempt to kidnap Princess Anne on March 20th, 1974. I did not realize that.
Yeah.
And in the original novel, Ryan saved Prince Charles and Princess Diana. And the idea is in the novel, the noble that he saves is Prince Charles, and the tabloid reports of trouble in his marriage to Princess Diana is portrayed largely as a fabrication of the biased media. Subsequently, reports would prove to be correct. The novel ends not with Sean Miller's death, but with his capture by American authorities. He was captured originally in England, which has no death penalty, but finally captured in the United States, which does. And in Summer of All Fears, the next novel, he and his fellow associates are executed by the state of Maryland for their crimes. And Clancy felt that having him die in action robbed the story, the overall story, of this contrast. So a lot of the political guts of it were torn out simply to make it an action movie, which, by the way, is fine by me, especially when this is, 30 years later, 33 years later? And the idea of the IRA as a terrorist group seems sort of quaint.
Yeah, you don't hear much these days, do you?
No, and granted, I'm not suggesting that the IRA is
right.
Anything less than a ferocious group, but they're not my group. I don't need to worry about them, I don't think. Plus, you know, the fact, I mean, one of the things they go into a little bit just as part of the story, but it also relies on you to remember the history of, you know, the IRA, lots of money in Boston went to the IRA. You know, the IRA was fairly openly trying to buy guns and explosives in America for use against the UK government. And there was a lot of public sympathy for the IRA here, so. At least on the East Coast. So now we have what's a Splinter Cell. Also sounds like Tom Clancy, doesn't it?
Splinter Cell is Tom Clancy.
No, I know. Yeah.
Oh,
sorry. I actually had, during this movie, when they start looking at satellite photography and stuff, I'm thinking, wow, this has like a Tom Clancy element to the whole thing. I'm like, oh, wait. So we have, you know, Sean Bean is good. Patrick Bergen is always good. Polly Walker was good, although she wasn't very around for much of it. So while being transferred to Albany Prison on the Isle of Wight, Miller's convoy is ambushed, and he is set free, and they end up executing the police officers during this escape, and they flee to Northern Africa to plan their next kidnapping attempt on Lord Holmes, because they are fixated on Lord Holmes. A lot of fixation in this movie. And Miller also persuades several members of the group to accompany him to the U.S. to murder Ryan and his family in revenge for killing his brother. So, Jack is had been healing and now is healed of his bullet wound, and they discover that Ann Archer is pregnant. Yay! Family moments. At the same time, CIA Vice Admiral James Earl Jones, wants Ryan back, but Ryan says no, mostly because, well, some of which he's too old for this shit, and also because, you know, his wife doesn't want him to go back into that job. It's dangerous. So he goes back to teaching at the U.S. Naval Academy, where we meet his friend and coworker, Robbie Jackson, played by Samuel L. Jackson.
The real battle.
Attention on deck.
Attention to orders. I have a presentation to make. For service above and beyond the call of duty of a tourist, even a Marine, we recognize Professor John Patrick Ryan with the Order of the Purple Target, and hope that he will duck next time, lest he become part of history rather than a teacher of it.
The Samuel L. he is young.
Oh, that was an odd choice. But you notice the giant bald spot still?
Well, yeah, but this is just after Do the Right Thing and Jungle Fever. But before he blew up into being the Samuel L. Jackson that everyone knows 2 years later in Pulp Fiction. I mean, he's basically best noted as being like a crackhead before this movie. And I mean, really, this didn't do anything, I don't think, to help his career necessarily, except for a payday. It was really Pulp Fiction that put him on the map. But we have a little bit of comic relief. And that's, at first, when I first watched this movie, I'm like, wow, that's what Samuel L. is all about. He's just about comic relief. That's not quite it. There is some comic relief because he comes in, and even though Jack's been given the Royal Victorian Knighthood or whatever.
The spiffy, I'm now a Knight of the British Order or something, whatever.
Something, yeah.
Except you can't be because he's American.
Yeah, it's some sort of, there are different things you can be and can't be. But he's given a reward or an award over there, but his Naval Academy instructors give him the Order of the Purple Target, and it's a bullseye with the word "shoot me" on it. But then we cut to that scene, which is fun, to a scene of Ryan sitting down talking to Robbie, and you know, Robbie asks him what was that all about? You know, being trying to be a hero, and Ryan is like, no, he couldn't let it happen in front of him. You know, he just saw these guys who were going to shoot up or kill this family, you know, right in front of him and his kids. He said
it pissed him off.
Yeah, he was like, it was all rage. He said it was pure rage. And Robbie's like, well, remind me never to make you angry at me.
I'll go on Millennium Falcon on your ass.
But that's the thing. That's what propels Ryan in this movie. He is based for the rest of the movie on rage. And it's unclear whether Ryan would shoot first, but he's definitely going to come after you. So, when seen moments later, when he survives an assassination attempt outside of the U.S. Naval Academy, and Miller and his henchmen attack the wife and child on the highway, thinking they killed him, you know, that's when Ryan now is in full rage again. So he goes back to work for the CIA. And he thinks it's the main IRA who's responsible for the attacks. And so the Sinn Féin spokesman Patty O'Neill, played by Richard Harris, A Man Called Horse. Did he sing MacArthur Park? Is that a different Richard Harris?
I don't honestly know.
I think it's the same guy. He left really? he left the cake out in the rain.
Imagine that you're 60s songwriting genius Jimmy Webb. You've just penned a 7-minute psychedelic orchestral epic, but no one wants to sing it. Then you remember your drinking buddy, the famous actor. He can sing a bit.
MacArthur's Park is melting in the dark. All the sweet green icing flowing down. Someone left the cake out in the rain. I don't think that I can take it, 'cause it took so long to bake it, and I'll never have that recipe again. Oh no.
Hey, he's not baking the cake. He can do whatever he wants with it. By the way, it is the very same Richard Harris, MacArthur Park.
Oh, awesome. Richard Harris, so he gets around then. He's bad, bad Leroy Brown. Meanest cat in the whole damn town. Oh, fine. I was making a sneakers reference, but I can't do it in a bad Asian accent, or that would just be racist of me.
Oh, see, I don't even get it.
In the restaurant where Werner Brandes and Liz are, where she's trying to get him to say all the words, the guy in the background is singing Leroy Brown.
It's not your fault. It's not a bad joke. It's a bad audience, so.
A joke for one. So since we're recapping a little bit, I'm going to back up just a little bit. So at the beginning of this movie, where the Ryan rescues the royals out of the car, yes. And then suddenly they had the CNN correspondent.
Yes.
Why did she have to be American? Wouldn't you more likely have a, I don't know, someone from London, CNN, perhaps, as correspondent?
I don't know. You'd think.
Yeah, it was that kind of irritated me. Also, when they come to, I don't know if we've gotten, have we gotten to the part where they come to let Ryan know that he escaped from the van and he might be, you know, they don't think he's going to come to America, but.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I think we kind of blew past it, so.
And the inspector is smoking in his house.
Well, yeah.
I'm like, who does that anymore? That doesn't seem likely.
Well, no, not anymore. It was 30 years ago.
And also, when the wife and daughter go biking on the worst, stormiest looking day ever, does that not look like a bad idea?
Well, it's not great.
Yeah.
Also, pretty spiffy car, right? Isn't that a Porsche?
Yeah, it's a Porsche. Well, it was
like
a Porsche.
944, maybe?
Something like that, yeah.
Maybe 911. I don't know. But
She was really driving that car, by the way.
Oh, well, excellent.
She loved the car, and it was good. She really liked it because it was a manual, and she's good at a manual.
I could tell.
But they had to rig an explosive to the window for the gunshot scene, and she said that was kind of scary.
I can imagine, yeah. Back to leaving the cake out in the rain. So our character, again, Richard Harris's character's name is Patty O'Neill. And by the way, that the IRA may take responsibility for all their attacks, but when they put out press releases, it's under the name of Patty O'Neill, like a fictitious name. So that's where that tip of the hat came from. But yeah, so he's on TV saying, hey, this is not an IRA attack. We would take responsibility for it if it was. So basically trying to play down the attack on the royals.
We're not stupid enough to poke our finger in the eye of the royal family.
Yeah, and we're not coming after Jack Ryan either, even though he may be a former member of the CIA, as they point out in court. And he comes to the hospital to express his condolences or sympathies or whatever, and that's where Ryan gives him the finger. Well, Ryan later finds out that no, you know, it may not be a regular brigade from the IRA. It was a splinter group. So he has to go back, and he wants to talk to O'Neill and say, hey, who, you know, you need to give these people up. We are coming after them, and you didn't do it, fine, so you help me find out who did. And he goes to this Irish pub in Boston and basically threatens the guy.
The IRA is not responsible for all this, I know that.
Are you waiting for me to agree with you? I've been saying this to the press till I'm blue in the face.
What's the point, isn't it? You claim responsibility for one thing, deny it for another. Nobody believes you anymore. I want to know where Sean Miller and Kevin O'Donnell are.
Let me try and understand this. You want me to sell out my fellow Irishman to you? Is that why you came down here? You don't understand me at all.
Oh, I think I do.
Look, I don't give a damn what they've done. But the day that I sell out my countrymen will be the day that I put a bullet through my own head.
That's it then, huh?
That's it. You know, on second thoughts, maybe I won't have a drink with you.
Okay, then I'll go home.
Have a safe trip.
I'll go home and call the TV stations. Give them what they want. Let them take their cameras into my daughter's hospital room. Put it on the evening news. I don't give a shit whether you did it or not, and neither will anyone else. But I will put such a stranglehold on your gun money, you'll be out in the street throwing rocks. I will fucking destroy you. I will make it my mission in life.
He doesn't basically threaten him. He threatens him.
That's where Ryan is like, oh, I will bury you. I'll just go to the press and say that you did it, the IRA did it, and no one will know the difference. You know, you'll be blamed anyway. So this is in your interest to help me out, dude.
It's a pretty good tactic, by the way.
Yeah, could have got the crap beat out of him by a bunch of people in the IRA sympathetic bar, but oh well. He's Jack Ryan. What's he going to do, right? Of course, Ryan does all this actual, what is his job? He's an analyst.
Right. He's just a CIA analyst.
Did you see the series Rubicon?
No.
I think it only lasted one season, but it is so good. I would highly recommend it.
It did only last one season, and it's on my list. It's just, there's so much on the list.
Oh yeah, no, me too. But I was actually really drawn in because it's a private group of security analysts.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're paid to write reports. But
is that where the necktie speech comes from?
Yes. Yes. Anyway, so Jack Ryan is doing his thing. Would you get to see a little bit of this movie, but not so much that it's distracting. Just enough to say, hey, wow. You know, he really has something to contribute. But not so much that it turns into like a procedural. Because right. This is, above all, this is an action movie, really.
Action slash thriller, yeah.
Yeah. So Ryan finds out that this group has taken refuge in this training camp in Libya.
Well, they never say Libya. They say North Africa somewhere. But
that's
then
true.
The map very clearly, it's Libya. If you've ever looked at a map in your life, it's Libya.
I think it actually shows on the computer screen. They just don't say it out loud.
Correct. It is literally Libya.
Yeah. So this is where O'Neill ends up delivering a little package to Ryan. And luckily, as Jack points out, that he can sleep at night. And he probably enjoys the irony because it turns out the girl involved in it that he recognizes from the hit on himself and maybe in a picture from the satellite. Turns out she's not Irish at all. She's English. So he didn't give up any kind of countrymen. He gave up her. And at first, Marty Cantor, like his boss or his coworker or whatever, says, like, come on, he's playing you. You know, you're looking for a girl. He gives you pictures of a girl. And Jack's like, I didn't tell him I was looking for a girl, Marty. Dun dun.
Also, I am Batman.
Exactly. Why wasn't he Batman? He could have been Batman. He could have been a hell of a Batman.
That's what I'm saying. I was just thinking about that. I'm like, you know what? Harrison Ford would have been a kick-ass Batman.
You know who else would have been? Clint Eastwood.
Oh, jeez.
You know who else could have been a really good Batman? Kid you not?
I'd give up.
Ronald Reagan.
I don't know about that. I was going to go with Robin Williams.
Oh, you would have been a better Joker.
Absolutely.
Or Riddler, maybe. He's too manic to be there, man.
Jared Leto, by the way. Oh, my God.
You know, I'm interested. Although it's funny because, you know, I'm not really necessarily interested in seeing the second Avengers movie at the theater, at least. And I thought that there would be a way I could finagle going to see the Mad Max movie in the theater. But not even necessarily interested in that at this point.
Yeah.
If I'm going to be trying to finagle to see movies on, you know, in theaters, they have to be a little bit better or a little bit more pressing, maybe.
Yeah.
I was thinking it'd be nice to actually talk about a movie that was made in the 2010s or more recent, like on the podcast at some point. So.
Yeah. Well, I've got like a Guardians of the Galaxy.
That's true. We could add that to the calendar.
Yeah, it's a great, that's a great movie. Despicable Me too. Despicable Me. I mean, we haven't really done any animated films, I don't think, have we?
Nope, not a one.
We should put Despicable Me and Despicable Me 2 down.
Okay, we can do that. Do it as a, just a one for both of them.
Could I? Have you seen either of them?
Yeah, I know I've seen the first one.
Wow. Yeah, I think you should just, I don't know, maybe you should watch them and decide. I watch them all the time. I think there may be too much. Well, we could try it. We could try to cram it into one.
What was it? Maybe not.
Have to release it in two parts.
Yeah, exactly. So that's down the road, though. We have a month or so, a couple months of movies already on the calendar. So.
Oh, yeah. We're into September, I think.
I think so, yeah. Anyway, okay, so they find this camp. They're pretty sure are these guys. Not 100% sure, but pretty sure. Enough so that James Earl Jones authorizes the British SAS attack on the camp. And they kill everyone in the camp. They're not fooling around. So they think they got him? Not sure. They think they got him. In the meantime, Lord Holmes decides to visit Ryan at his home in America to formally present him his order of the whatever. And that's when we find out that there is a traitor amongst them. The assistant to Lord Holmes is actually part of the Splinter Cell.
It's a trap!
So Miller, O'Donnell, and Annette are coming to the house, and you've got the traitor guy inside, and luckily there's a storm, and so under the pretense, I guess they cut the power on their own, right? It wasn't an actual power outage.
Well, yeah, the dude, the turncoat turned the power off.
Yeah, but there was still
a storm. The house by, you know, the, of course, because the breaker switch is in the basement.
Yeah, and luckily, no cell phones. But the landlines work fine because, again, now you'd have the opposite problem. Now, you'd have to explain away why the cell phones don't work. But very few people, or a lot less people than used to, actually have landlines anymore. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And neither of us have traditional landlines. Like, nope, yours is a VoIP, right?
Yep.
And ours is, I think it's VoIP, actually. It's through the cable system, so it must be.
But Ryan uses a very, very, very effective interrogation technique on him.
I know. This is, my notes say, pretty harsh interrogation. He shoots him in the knee.
Yeah, that's how you do it.
Yeah, exactly. And like, you know what? If no you come fun, up no on bad. Charges later, then so be it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't hide it. It's literally a ticking time bomb scenario.
Yeah, but it turns out that he ends up looking like it's friendly fire, and so who knows?
Yeah, well, again, that's on his conscience, not on ours. Plus, he's not a law enforcement person, he's an analyst, right? Although I guess he is working for the CIA, so that's a government official there. However, he's in his own home as well. This is not an operation he's on. He's been attacked at his own home.
Right.
So, and that's where we have an actual fun little scene at the end. It's cat and mouse in the house, and then it's run and flee on the sea, where, you know, the family's in danger, but not so much that it freaks out too much. And there's the final fight between Sean Bean and Indiana Jones.
Yeah, but the thing I like about the house logistics is that Ann Archer, she's not the typical helpless woman. Like, she looks for the gun, she's looking for the ammo, she can't use the ammo, so she just uses the rifle.
Oh yeah, no, I thought it was actually, this movie was respectful to Ann Archer. It was respectful to Thora Birch. You know, yeah. They didn't give her so much that it was like, kid actors, but they gave her enough that she was actually a legitimate member of the family.
She wasn't a goddamn screaming Dakota Fanning.
Yeah. Yeah, she had some lines, and they were kind of cute, you know, and that's what she was there for. But she wasn't a distraction, which I thought was good. And yeah. I'm happy when people get, you know, characters that allow them to do at least one thing. And you're right, Ann Archer's great. She drives fast, and she's a doctor. I mean, she is she's not the party planner in the family.
No.
Like, if anything, her husband's a teacher. She's the one who's got to be embarrassed.
Yeah, she's the breadwinner.
Yeah. He's got some kind of crazy, like, he's a writer /teacher. He's basically an artist. Yeah, she paid for that damn vacation. It wasn't him. And there's a nice fight scene on the boats, which is great. And, you know, it's nice that, you know, when the voice of reason, it's the fixation that is the undoing of these Splinter Cell people. Because Miller is singly fixated on Ryan. And the Splinter Cell itself was singly fixated on this Lord Holmes. And neither of them can be dissuaded. So Miller ends up killing O'Donnell and Annette so he can continue his fight. Because at any point, he could have, you know, they could have gone another way. Nope, but there's a nice scene, and the anchor at the end is fun because the anchor is a pretty serious looking weapon, and then, you know, ends up being the old switcheroo at the end. But, you know what I like about this movie? And it made me smile. This movie ends with the best cliffhanger ever. Wasn't that well executed?
What with him in the water?
No. After the water, there's an inside joke that I didn't get, but I found in the trivia where at the end, after the water thing, they're making breakfast or whatever, and Ann Archer gets a phone call. But in the middle, Harrison Ford asks Thora Birch whether she wants for breakfast, toast or toast.
Toast.
And she's sitting there, and there's like a bowl of oatmeal in front of her or something. Or maybe a carton of oatmeal. Well, she used to do oatmeal commercials. So that's kind of a fun inside joke there. But yeah, the movie ends with Ann Archer getting a call from the hospital saying that A, the baby's okay, and B, we know the sex. Do you want to know?
Yeah.
And there's a nice little scene where they look at each other, and Jax looks at Thora Birch, and she's like, I don't know. He's like, I don't know either. You know what? And Ann Archer's like, you guys got to tell me because I'll go with whatever you say. And it's so like, yeah, okay. Yes, go ahead and tell. She goes, okay. And the sex is, boom, cut to credits.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
It's fantastic. It's like in the theater, you would cheer.
Yeah, but you knew you knew there was going to be another movie. So, and the original ending was different. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
The boat scene was different. So the boat scene originally, when they shot it the first time, they end up on the rocks having a fist fight and in the water up and down. But Noyce was like, you know, this looks terrible because you don't get any action in water because it's slow. Because everything is slowed down in water because you can't punch, you know, there's no action. So they cut it and recast it. And he said his vision was that they were going to have it more as a Western style where the boat comes up against the other boat and then he jumps from boat to boat, kind of like one wagon overtaking the other wagon.
Yeah, kind of like Indiana Jones kind of fighting.
Exactly. So.
Yeah, but I thought it was nice and effective. It was long enough to justify itself as an action scene, but not so long that you're like, ugh, you know. It had just enough action that that you're into it, but not so much action that these people become superheroes, because that's the one thing about Jack Ryan, at least in these movies so far we've seen, is he's not a superhero. He's just a guy.
He's just a guy, just an analyst.
Yeah. So you take an ordinary man, throw him in extraordinary circumstances, and you know you have an adventure movie.
Yeah. And the freeway shots were shot on the unfinished Century Freeway in California. And so it wasn't finished. And so they got permission to use it and they just used it. It was their own private freeway for a while, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. That turns out that happens quite a bit. It's awesome though.
Yeah.
Cause I think that's what they did with Speed. Also, they had use of a freeway that hadn't opened yet.
That's pretty cool.
So anything else on Patriot Games?
I'm reading through my notes. Drew can be jealous.
See, it's all about perspective. That's the funny, you know, funny thing is that, you know, I get in my head kind of what we're doing, but it's nice to have to talk to you guys about the same stuff and hear the same sort of stories from a different viewpoint. Because I have no idea what it's like to follow you guys in school. None at all. Also, I think my newest male coworker is like 6'6 or 6'7. And we have a new custodial person who's like 6'5 or 6'6 or something. And, you know, it's always like, wow, you know, and then I think to myself, you know, he's like, yeah, that sounds so great. You have to duck down or you're hitting your head. I'm like, yeah, but you know what? Turns out I will never be burdened with the knowledge of what the top of a refrigerator looks like. ever. He's like, yeah, it's dusty up there. I'm like, I know. Yeah. I'm not dusting it. I never see it.
Yeah, you're never taller than the shower head.
Yeah, never. Never, absolutely. Yeah, nor am I so skinny that I have to run around to get wet.
Yeah. I'll never have that problem. So one of the things I noticed in this movie, did you notice that one of the inspectors in this movie was the same inspector from The Saint?
I did not know.
So, yeah, Alan Armstrong is his name, and he was the male inspector of the male and female who was interrogating Elizabeth Shue towards the end of the movie. And in this movie, he was one of the interrogators when they had Sean in the room. And then he was also the one who was like standing outside the subway when they were chasing the book guy.
Yeah, so we didn't talk about the book guy. He was fine, but he wasn't a super important character.
His character was almost unimportant, except that I think that's how they found him.
That's how they found her.
Yeah, but I mean, it was a subplot that I think, I don't know. I didn't have any deleted scenes. There was, even though I have apparently the director's cut edition with extra features, the extra feature being an entire, 30-minute bio of all the actors and how they came to be in this project, which is interesting, but not very noteworthy.
Well, and so what's the next movie is Clear and Present Danger?
Clear and Present Danger.
Okay, and then followed by Sum of All Fears, followed by Shadow Recruit, right?
Yeah. And okay. Sum of All Fears, again, I think was their attempt to reboot, which is funny, because then they do go back and again reboot with Shadow Recruit, which I think you and I discussed before. I didn't even realize it was a Jack Ryan movie.
Yeah, well. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts, dial it already.